Hello and welcome to Next Level Ops, a podcast that explores tools, tips, and techniques for hosting and managing websites presented by Plesk. I'm your host, Joe Casabona, and this week we are talking about shared and self-hosted email with Christian Mollenkamp. I was really excited to get into this conversation because I recently had some troubles with my own shared / self-hosted email, and a lot of that comes out in this episode. Christian provides some really good insight into hosting your email and how to make sure your email is configured correctly. So let's get into that episode. But before we do, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast to get the latest episodes as they come out. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It really helps people discover the show. All right, now let's get into it. Hello and welcome to Next Level Ops, a podcast that explores tools, tips, and techniques for hosting and managing websites presented by Plesk. I'm your host, Joe Casabona, and I am here with Christian Mollenkamp. He is the senior software engineer at Aphelia IT. Christian, how are you today?
I'm very well. Thanks, Joe. How are you?
I am great. Thanks so much for joining us. We are going to talk about something that I recently had a lot of trouble with, so I am excited to learn a lot, and that is shared or self-hosted email. Essentially, you know, there are services out there like G Suite or Outlook that will do the hosting for you, but a lot of hosting providers, web hosting providers, will also provide the service of email. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But first, Christian, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
So I'm a senior software engineer for Aphelia IT, and we develop a groupware product called Collab. And I'm one of my responsibilities is the integration of that into Plesk as well. That's a core responsibility of me.
Gotcha. And what is, you said Collab, what does that do?
Collab is a communication and collaboration suite. So at its core, there's certainly email and calendaring, but then there's also task management, there's file sharing, etc. So you have basically a collaboration suite where you can work together with other people for within a company, for instance, or within a school.
Awesome. So it kind of sounds like a self-hosted version almost of like of Google Apps. Is that an accurate, or like Zoho, is that an accurate analogy?
Yeah, definitely. We have a special focus also on security and that you maintain control over your own data. So it's exactly for that use case where you can self-host it and be in control of the whole solution.
Oh, that's great. It sounds really interesting. And it's integrated into Plesk too. So if those listening out there want to check it out, you can definitely do that. So let's jump right into it then, because I'll set the stage with a personal story. I was paying for two different G Suite accounts, and it was just me. So it wasn't like a lot of money per year, but I figured why have an extra expense when I could self-host email on my hosting provider, which is, I won't name names, but so I decided to do that. And then a couple of weeks later, I realized that all of the email going to that address was being flagged as spam in Gmail and other hosting providers. So I didn't do a lot of research. I just set it up because it seemed easy enough, and I probably missed a bunch of steps. So the first question I want to ask you, Christian, is what should someone consider when choosing an email hosting provider? Is it good enough to say, oh, my web host offers it, so I should do that, or I should do G Suite, or I should look at Collab? What are some of the things that they should think about?
So I think usually it's something that you're going to use for quite a long time, or it's like a very central part of your infrastructure typically. So I think it's definitely worth considering a couple of options. And there's, of course, a lot of different things to consider. First, certainly like the features that you need, because usually it's not just email, but it's also other features that you need to go with it. For instance, maybe you need a calendar. Maybe you need to be able to share your calendar with other people. Then there's certainly the interoperability with different clients. You may use your mobile client. You may have a preference for a specific desktop client. So you need to make sure that it works with that. Another very important topic, in my opinion, is vendor lock-in. So should you ever be unhappy with the solution that you chose, you want to make sure that you can move on because you're going to have a lot of valuable data in that system. So you want to be able to pull that data out and migrate to another service.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, right? Because, most email service providers, strictly email, will provide something like IMAP, where you're essentially pulling things from the server. But, you know, if you've been with a provider for 5 years, even, and then you want to move, that's probably a lot of email and a lot of other information, like calendar information, that you're trying to get out. And some vendors do not make it easy.
Yeah, sometimes it's really just like you get to a very specific limited subset, or they provide extra functionality on proprietary features, and that data you're just not going to get out. And if you're just heavily relying on that, then it's going to be very difficult for you to migrate away. So I think that's something that you should consider from the start.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and especially, for a personal email address, I'm sure like Gmail or whatever is fine. But if this is something your business depends on, and if you're working with something like a lot of personally identifiable information, right? If you're like, maybe if you're doing work in a law firm, or at least I'm more familiar with the United States laws, but there's HIPAA. So if you're doing work with patient data, you know, you probably, there's probably some considerations that you should make there for keeping your data, quote unquote, in the cloud or whatever.
Definitely. There's also, yeah, depending on what you're doing, there's regulations you have to be compliant with. You might be a reporter or someone that needs special protection. So you may want to take this into account. And for that, also things come into play, like the jurisdiction where the service runs. Whether they have sufficient protection for your use case, whether they have transparent terms and conditions, so you understand what your rights are and what is going to happen to your data as well. And for the data usage, a very simple guideline is, for instance, whether you're paying for the product, because if you're not, it's very likely that somebody is going to make money based on your data.
Yeah, absolutely, right? That's it's not an old adage, it's a new adage, but it's if you're not paying for the product, then you are the product, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, I think that's really good. I think that sets the stage for the next question here, which is, what are the benefits of self-hosting over using a service like Gmail, right? A lot of, or Gmail or G Suite, if you're looking at the business option, right? People will probably look at that ease of use, as easy as setting up email can be, and say, oh, well, I'll just pay Google however much a month and they can think about it for me. But what are some of the benefits of not paying Google?
So I think if we just boil it down to one word, it's basically control. You maintain control over your solution. And that's in many separate ways. So for one thing, if you self-host, you have more control over the product itself or the option value that it provides. Because usually products that you run have a different integration options with other products. So you can mix and match different solutions to really suit your needs. While if you just use a service like Google, then it's just going to be what it is. And also, if it changes, it's just going to change. You can't really do anything about it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I mean, we've been seeing it a lot lately where platforms, not necessarily email, I'm not as well versed in email platforms changing like this, but we've seen in recent years Medium say, well, we're going to paywall certain content so that we can make money. And if you relied on that as your main blog, then all of a sudden what people can't just read the stuff that you want to put out there for free. slight oversimplification, but I think I hit the basics there.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So I think you're absolutely, yeah, right? And I think you're absolutely right. Control is super important, especially because of what you said before. There could be regulations, compliance. There could, you know, you are going to be using something for your email for a long time. Email is still the most, I'm going to say the most common. I haven't done the research on this, but I'm pretty sure email is still the most common way that people will communicate and especially reach out to new contacts, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You can talk to...
Everybody has an email address. That's the one common denominator across the globe, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, at least, again, here in the United States, it's like currency, right? When you go and you pay for something, they ask you... When you go to stores here in the United States, they just ask you what your email address is as if it's a normal part of the transaction. Yeah. So they'll be like, what's your email address? I'm like, I don't have one. I'll say I don't have one. And they're like, you don't have an email address? And I'm like, not one I give out. So it's just, you're absolutely right. Everybody does have an email address. So you mentioned, you know, having a bit more control over the product and certain features, integrations. And if we boil that down a little bit, let's talk about maybe what to look out for. I think I'm skipping a little ahead here, but I'm most interested in, I think everybody has their own favorite email client, right? Some people will use the web interface, but for self-hosted email, the web interfaces I've used are like Squirrel Mail and Horde, and they're dated to say the least.
Sorry to hear you.
That should have been like the first red flag when I signed up for my hosting company's email. I was like, "What do you want to use Squirrel or Horde?" And I'm like, "What?" For those of you who don't know, those are insanely old email clients, like web-based email clients. So all of that long ramble is to say, if you are using a self-hosted solution, what are the options for email clients? Obviously, like you can use something like Spark or Apple Mail or Android's equivalent of that, which I don't know if it's just the Gmail app. But you know, as far as like web-based clients for self-hosting, what's really out there? I know I didn't prep you for this, but I'm very curious.
So the webmail client that we develop is Roundcube Mail, which is widely used. It provides a very desktop-like experience to the tune where even I normally despise web apps. So I'm really a fan of the desktop experience, but Roundcube really gives you all those very desktop-like features, like you have a right-click menu, you have desktop notifications for new email, you can drag and drop stuff.
Awesome.
And it even works on mobile devices with the new responsive skin, so you can use it everywhere for sure.
That sounds great. And because, you know, I think there's also like a little bit of confusion, or there was for me when I first started, like I could just like switch any of these webmail email clients but it was unclear what was kind of going on under the hood and what I had to control with my hosting provider versus what I can control in the webmail client. And so my next question or my next couple of questions are around that. First of all, as a hosting provider, what are some of the pitfalls of hosting email, right? So you mentioned that your product, Collab, is integrated into Plesk. What are some of the things that you have to think about being a email hosting provider?
So I think one of the pitfalls that you hit, as you mentioned earlier, is called reputation management. And that is other services that receive email, they have to fight a lot of spam. And one means to do that is that you track the reputation of primarily domains and IP addresses where the email is coming from. So if your domain or IP has a bad reputation, then it's just going to be recognized as spam immediately and you're not going to get any email delivered. So that's certainly one of the biggest pitfalls out there. There's a bunch of others, like you need to properly configure your domains to make sure your MX records are there. Some reputation related records are there. You need to make sure that if a customer comes in, that domain actually belongs to that customer, so it doesn't just register somebody else's domain. You have to do capacity planning, et cetera, et cetera. There's a whole laundry list of pitfalls.
Yeah. So that's really interesting, right? Because reputation management does age of the service come into play here, right? Like if I want to set up an email hosting provider tomorrow, will it take some time for my reputation to be good, or do I get like the benefit of the doubt first? Am I on thin ice? Like what does that look like from a provider standpoint?
Well, if you're using a new domain, that will definitely initially negatively impact your reputation, because you can imagine a spammer just will buy a whole bunch of cheap domains and use those to sending out spam. So if those had a great reputation initially, that wouldn't really work well. Mm-hmm. So yes, going to be some buildup to it, but it's perfectly feasible. It's not like you have to wait for years or so. It's perhaps a couple of weeks or so.
Right. And conversely, right, with the domain that I've been talking about as with my personal story, I've owned that domain since 2004, and that was still getting flagged as spam because I'm going to say the MX records, the domain of my provider, there was something amiss there. And it's interesting because it wasn't blacklisted, but there was I think there were some other pieces I was missing. So, but how can you check the reputation of your email hosting provider or MX record providers, if I'm using the right terms?
I mean, you can certainly check. So there's a whole bunch of protection mechanisms that are based on your domain, which allow the recipient of an email to verify that the email first comes from your domain. And then is also hasn't been tampered with. And then you can check a couple of policies to decide whether this is now genuine content or not. This is in place to make sure that a spammer can't just claim that this email comes from your domain and thus basically abuse your reputation. Now, if you don't have those protection mechanisms in place, then someone else can just destroy your good reputation or your domain.
Gotcha. And that's so I mean, we talk about a lot about WordPress on this podcast, and I think that something a lot of WordPressers specifically run into is they have, you know, maybe they have WordPress sending out email via a contact form or something like that, and they'll run into this issue. And it sounds like it's probably because of these certain policies, right? You maybe haven't gone through the steps to verify that WordPress is actually sending out email as who it's claiming to be, right? As you, because maybe your domain is registered somewhere and your website is hosted somewhere else, and the IP addresses don't match, and you haven't verified that this is actually a legit email transaction.
Yes, that could very well be. It could also be that you're perhaps on a shared hosting environment where you share your IP address with other people that are careless or even actual spammers. Therefore, reputation of that IP could be burnt already.
Yeah. Yep. It's almost like if you live in an apartment complex with a neighbor that has crazy parties loud every night, then your whole apartment building gets blamed for it.
Yep. Maybe.
So, awesome.
exactly.
So, So there's a lot around reputation management and making sure that, you know, rightfully email clients are making sure that their users aren't getting spammed. But are there, what are some common ways that email hosting can be misconfigured? You know, what should I have done when I set up my self-hosted email or my email hosted with my website provider?
So the first step, certainly to make sure that email is delivered and your domain is protected from spammers, is to set up SPF, DKIM, and DMARC. These are three different but related mechanisms. So SPF is to make sure that an email is coming from an authorized IP address. So that allows the recipient to detect if someone else from, say, a different part of the world is suddenly starting to send, deliver email on your behalf. Then the second part is DKIM, that's domain keys identified mail, which is basically a signature for the email, which allows the recipient to verify that the email has not been tampered with. So it's basically a hash over the email that allows the recipient to make sure that it hasn't been modified. And then gotcha. DMARC ties those two mechanisms together by publishing a policy and establishing a reporting protocol, so you can also learn if something went amiss. So these three mechanisms protect your domain essentially, and other services that of course check this, like everybody that takes email seriously does this. So those services will then give you attribute a greater reputation to your domain than if you don't have any of these checks in place.
Gotcha. So you're essentially providing credentials for your email. And with SPF, this one I am maybe the most familiar with after recent weeks, but this is a text record that goes in your DNS, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that allows the recipient to sort of out of band via your domain that you claim that you sent this from, allows to check a DNS record whether the IP where this actually came from matches that record.
Gotcha. So someone sends an email on behalf of my domain, or I send an email from my domain. The recipient can say, hey, this is saying it's coming from Casabona.org. It then checks the Casabona.org DNS to make sure I've said that wherever sent that email can actually send it.
Yes, exactly.
As Casabona.org.
Exactly.
Got it. And then DKIM, right? Domain keys identified mail. Is that something that also belongs in the DNS? Is that something that you set up on the server side? What's just like a high-level overview of what steps you would need to take to make sure you have that?
So that's also something that you configure in your on your mail server that is sending the mail, and it's basically signing your email and then adding a header to the mail.
Gotcha.
Which then and that's then coupled with again a DNS record that allows. So that's then just a public key, a public key mechanism, which allows the recipients to verify that the email is still in the same form as you've sent it. Otherwise, somebody could intercept the email or inject a different message that has been tampered with.
Gotcha. So it's very similar to like SSL in that sense, kind of, right? It's making sure that this website that has been sent to my browser was sent from where I think it was sent.
Yeah, it's similar to the certificate infrastructure that we have, like the certificate check that you get when you visit the website, which also checks that this is indeed the website that you intended to visit.
Gotcha. And then finally, DMARC. This is the one I'm least familiar with. In my travels, at least, I didn't see an obvious way for me to do that. Like, there were step-by-step instructions for SPF. With DKIM, like, there was, like, a checkbox that I just essentially said, yeah, use this. What would I have to do to enable DMARC? Is that something that my provider needs to do? Kind of, again, high-level overview here.
So DMARC basically ties together DKIM and SPF by publishing another record with a policy that tells the recipient of the email that you have a DKIM record, that you have SPF checks enabled, and what should happen if any of those checks fail. And then also establishes the means to report back if something failed. Because otherwise you have the problem, right, that your email doesn't arrive and you don't know why. Mm-hmm. And you just never hear back. And DMARC also provides reporting back, so you, if there is a problem, that you learn about it so you can fix it.
Gotcha. So if you have SPF and DKIM, is that, like, is DMARC then assumed, or is there, like, another thing you need to enable to get DMARC?
DMARC needs to be published separately. That's also a DNS record. So if you're using Plesk, you essentially just set the checkbox to also enable DMARC.
Gotcha. Well, thank you. That was a great overview. And you mentioned Plesk, so we can go right into the last question here, which is, what features in Plesk help with email hosting?
The first thing that we just talked about, SPF, DKIM, and DMARC is built in. That's a bunch of checkboxes that you have to set to enable it. So that makes it very easy to just check those off the list. There's also other UIs for important measures. So you can, for instance, do rate limit. Thing, and you can do message size limits, which is also important for interoperability with other email services. Because if you, for instance, send around 200 megabyte emails, you're just going to get rejected. You want to catch that early and also make sure that you're a good citizen within the email community. Gotcha. Because that will also protect your reputation as well, right? Otherwise, there's the Plesk email security extension, of course, with enhanced anti-spam and antivirus capabilities. Again, also very important. I mean, on one hand, you want to protect yourself from spam and viruses, of course, and your users. On the other hand, you also want to do that outbound to not to make sure should a spammer gain access to your system that he can only do a limited amount of damage. Because again, your reputation is at stake here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another thing to think about, right? If you if you accidentally open some spam thing, right, and it starts emailing all your entire address book, that's going to hurt your reputation, right? Because now your email address has become a spam email address.
Yes, if you host an email service, you also need to make sure that you got the responsibility for that system. So you need to make sure that it's not abused. And Plesk definitely offers features there. As I've said, for instance, the rate limiting also severely limits the amount of damage anybody can do. Because if you're just going to be able to send, say, 2 messages a minute, then that's a lot less worse than if you get that multiple per seconds.
Well, Christian, this has been very educational for me, and I know it has been for the listeners too. If people want to learn more about kind of what you're doing, where can they find you?
So you're looking best for Plesk Premium Email, which is the name of Collab integrated into Plesk. It gives you a whole slew of features exactly for those use cases. So you get better protection, for instance, against cross-site request forgery. We have a troubleshooter integrated that highlights various problems. We have, as I've talked earlier, the responsive skin, full mobile device connectivity, so you're free to use whatever devices you like. And it provides much more than email. We have various integrations with C-File for file sharing. We have a Mattermost integration, which gives you a very Slack-like experience, but hosted on yourself, where you're in full control. We have collaborative editing through Collabora. So that gives you a full collaboration suite where you're in full control, where you can decide where it's hosted and where you can be sure that the email also arrives.
Awesome, awesome. That sounds great. Plesk Premium Email. That sounds fantastic. It integrates kind of all the features that you mentioned that Plesk can help with email hosting and a bunch of stuff that we've talked about in this episode of Next Level Ops. So Christian, thanks again so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much to Christian for joining us this week. I certainly learned a lot, and I think that there was some really good insight here. I think probably the biggest takeaway and the one that kind of rang most true for me was to make sure you have SPF, DKIM, and DMARC set up to make sure that your email is getting where it needs to go. So for all of the show notes, you can head over to plesk.com/podcast. If you liked this episode, please consider subscribing and giving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It will really help people discover the show. Thanks so much for listening to Next Level Ops. Until next time, remember to take it to the next level.